and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show, as always. With me today is one of the authors of the Lid book, Naked Banking, Stephen Hogg. How are you today, Stephen?
Very good, thank you.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you here in the studio with us for today's episode. And to our listeners, Stephen is the Director of Business Banking Propositions at Metro Bank, and is here to talk to us about Naked Banking and the themes and ideas behind the book, and we're very happy to have him here in the studio. Now, without further delay, my first question for you, Stephen, and what inspired you to become an author?
Well, I have an English degree despite working in banking, and I always thought that I had a book in me somewhere. I didn't think it was going to be a book on banking, if I'm perfectly honest. But when the opportunity arose, Paul had the idea and recruited me into it. It seemed like something that was really worth doing, and here we are.
Great. And one thing that really sticks out for me personally about the book is the title, actually. It's called Naked Banking, and that's quite a fascinating title. What was the reasoning or perhaps the idea behind it?
I think it's a slightly tongue-in-cheek title over the top of a serious idea. What we were talking about in the very beginning when we were kicking around the idea for the book was the idea of laying banking bare, of exposing some of the nastier secrets that people probably don't know about. And our working title ended up being the final title, Naked Banking. Exactly that, really, just laying bare the secrets of the banking world.
Yeah, and I like to get into that because banks are something which is an integral part of our life, and we all deal with them in one way or another, and we all depend on them in some way. Yet for many of us, they seem to be sometimes everything wrong when it comes to the world of finance. Why is this stigma? Why is it happening?
The short answer would be please read the book. But it's a complicated question with a complicated answer. But it boils down to some simple things, really. Banks are very important. They are extremely critical to the way the economy runs. They are a safe place for people to save their money. They're a useful place to get loans back into the economy so that people can buy houses, businesses can run. However, over time, they've grown into very anti-competitive, very large structures with very old systems that are very expensive to maintain, large property portfolios that are really quite out of date in today's digital economy. They face these very, very large costs to run themselves, which puts pressure on the product managers in particular to build products and design products that drive income into the bank to cover the costs and make a profit. So the incentives have kind of turned upside down a little bit. The focus has been lost from customer service, delivering real fair value to customers, and it's become slightly more self-serving, I think unintentionally a lot of the time. But as a result, you can't really pick up a newspaper these days without seeing a headline about PPI or some other kind of mis-selling scandal where banks haven't delivered fair value to customers.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting point that you raised there. And before we move on to the next question, there's a comment there that really caught my attention. And that was the customer service part of banking. And in a world of automation in everywhere in our lives, from our mobile phones to our laptop or whatever it may be, we value automation. But it feels that banking is that one sector where people have really started to appreciate how valuable it is to be able to talk to a person. And perhaps, is that something that might play a factor into why people may be skeptical about the industry and why they might want more people?
I think there's a number of ways of looking at that. Certainly banking is very keen to automate more than it has done historically. As you look across sectors like retail, for example, digital has played a huge part in the transformation already. Look at the rise of Amazon, of Apple, companies like that. And that same transformative adoption of technology hasn't really happened yet in banking. It's happening now. Billions are being spent on it, but it hasn't happened to the same extent. I think Paul and Carolina and I have a healthy regard for digitization and also a degree of skepticism for it as well, in the sense that we do think that banking is a people business. It's about trust. It's about physical locations. We all work or have worked for Metro Bank, which is clearly building what we call stores rather than branches, to be that community presence. And we do believe in local face-to-face banking. I think the kind of banking that we really would like to see is the perfect blend where customers have the choice. If they want to operate on a mobile app, great. If they want to come into a store, great. If they want to sit there on a desktop or a laptop and do their online banking finances, that's also okay. The challenge for banks is being able to serve each of those channels sufficiently well to give great customer service and fair value in all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, this leads into my next question quite well, and that, what are the most important factors when it comes to creating this great relationship between the bank and its customers?
There are some general, simple answers that are true for all business types, really. Honesty, simplicity, transparency, delivering on expectations. The simple example we use at work all the time is, if a customer requests us to call them back, if we promise to call them back in an hour and we call them back in 2 hours, that's terrible service. If we promise to call them back the same day and we call them back within 2 hours, it's exactly the same experience, but the expectation has been set correctly and given room to impress. So I think there are some simple tips and tricks to it. I think the in-house acronym, mnemonic if you like, at Metro is actually worth saying here, AMAZE. It's a little acronym. The first A is attend to every detail, make every wrong right, ask if you're not sure, because we do want our colleagues in the front line to bump the questions up to senior management. It always takes two to say no. We'd say yes as fast as we can, but if we don't think we can do something for a customer, we would like them to bump it up to senior management. The Z is for zest, something that I personally struggle with every day, not being naturally exuberant, but many of my colleagues help me out on that front. And the E is the final one, exceed expectations, which is really where the Metro kind of power of the punch comes in. If we can continue to do that, exceeding expectations every day, that is how we create fans and win more customers through word of mouth. I think applying that to just about any aspect of retail, be it banking or further afield, you could do a lot worse than do that.
Yeah, and of course, I think it's easy to forget sometimes that whether it is a branch or a store or whatever it is customer facing, that space is actually, it's part of the high street, it's part where people visit every day, and it's quite important to build that front-facing relationship with customers. But there's one area that we briefly touched upon when it comes to automation and technology. And one thing that really stuck out for me as I was thinking about today's podcast when it came to automation is that banking never sleeps. And that when it comes to automation, it's not like we can turn off the system, then do what we need to do, put it back on, and then it will be updated, it will be fine, and it will be new. It's an ever-evolving beast, which I think presents a lot of challenges and a lot of difficulties, but at the same time, a lot of rewards. So what role does technology and automation actually play in the world of banks today?
It's everything in banking. There are billions of transactions happening all over the world every single day. They're all recording in ledgers all over the place. In its simplest form, that is current account banking. And the sheer volume of data in banking is probably greater than almost every other industry on earth, given the nature of how quickly the transactions proliferate. That's before you've got into the technology that drives processes, risk control, document management, any of those kind of good things. Banks have always been heavy investors in technology and very early adopters of technology for exactly that reason. I think the first, in the book we talk about it, the first real mainframe deployment into industry was in banking in the UK in the early 60s. And from that point forward, banks have always been very, very keen to adopt technology to manage that flow of information. As we were saying just now, though, there's using technology to be efficient and structured and manage risk. It can't ever replace customer service, though. It's only ever a tool, a means to an end, which is where some of these digital technologies today get really interesting. They're ways to be closer to the customer. Everybody has the smartphone in their pocket, actually delivering great banking services, taking all of that difficulty and complexity of the underlying data and structuring that beautifully into a mobile experience. That's really challenging. But if you get it right, it's a fantastically strong customer experience.
Absolutely agreed on that point. And actually, this leads me to the final, let's say, bit of the formula, which is very important for the whole magic wheel to work, and that's the consumers themselves. And often, you know, even in preparation with this podcast, what really I was thinking about is information. And that's always at the core of any service. And I find that consumers can often be quite confused when it comes to the services they need or the services that they want, but not really sure how to get around and what to ask and who are the right people to ask. And how can they be better informed about the services that their banks provide?
It's a great question. And I think banks haven't helped themselves here in that they've proliferated complexity and obscurity rather than focusing on delivering clear, simple products for people to use. As we talk about it in the book, that's actually sometimes very much for the bank's benefit, so that they can hide charging structures and take advantage of behavioural bias in the customers to make more money. I do think, though, that there are some things that customers can do for themselves beyond just kind of reading the small print and comparing different offers. We set it out, actually, in the book, in the back of Chapter 8, asking oneself simple questions when approaching a financial product. What do I really want to achieve with this product? What's the bank trying to get me to do? The numbers that I'm seeing in relation to the pricing and the offer, try to put them in context. They appear good value on the surface, but in relation to the actual deal that's being done, are they really a good deal, or is there something else going on here? It's those kinds of critical questions that customers can apply very simply to financial products, just to try to get inside the head of the bank a little bit and protect themselves from the worst of the difficult product structures that there might be out there.
Right. That's absolutely true. And of course, for many of our listeners, you know, the first thing that might come to mind is, as you mentioned a while ago, the idea of PPI and a huge scandal that has caused in the subservient, you know, consequences of that. And I think it is important to ask the questions. And sometimes we intimidate ourselves and it might seem like a very simple question, and we will be told, well, yes, we can explain everything to you, but at the same time, we don't want to look like we don't know about something. And that's a very interesting behavioral bias that we have. My final question for you, however, is unrelated to all of that, and it's something that we ask every guest on a podcast, and that is, what are you currently reading?
So I have two young boys, one's 2.5 and one's 8 months old, so a lot of children's books is the honest answer. I do have a Kindle, though, and just the other day I downloaded something a little bit strange for me, actually, Michael Faraday's Chemical History of a Candle. It's a series of lectures that were given part of the Faraday Christmas lecture series in the early 19th century. They're a brilliant exposition of what it is to really observe something and then describe it beautifully simply. And actually, related to the theme that we've just been discussing, the ability to take something extremely complicated and distill it down to its barest essence and communicate it very, very clearly is a wonderful skill to have, and one that Michael Faraday had in spades. So that's what I'm reading right now.
Great. And of course, for our listeners, we'll put a link in the description below where you can find out more about that book. And if you would like to make very complicated and difficult things into simple, understandable, bite-sized chapters. But with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Thank you very much indeed.
And of course, for those listening, if you liked what we talked about today and you would like to know about Naked Banking, the book itself, links in the description below can be found where you can go and you can read more about the book. And you can also find all purchase links as well. Once again, we thank you very much for joining us on today's episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio, and we look forward to seeing you next week.